Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. My name is Nick Parks, and I'm from the Microfame Media Network. On this episode, I'll be interviewing David Schreiner-Klein as we continue with our mini-series, Fire Your Business Coach. Some business coaches can be a lot like cult leaders. Today, we're going to talk about some of the similarities. So, David, what exactly should we look out for?
Some people have mentioned names that I think many people would recognize that have this sort of cult-like aura to them. And other people have mentioned communities or programs that have been helpful where it's not at all about the individual who started it, but it's about what the framework or the structure or the process or the community of the helping organization. And it's not cult-like whatsoever. And if the founder of the coaching organization were to step aside, there are processes and mechanisms and systems in place that the organization would keep humming along, because it's all about what the organization as an organization can do for its clients and what the community that it has built can do for its clients, rather than these kind of misplaced aspirations that one individual is promoting through a vast marketing engine.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. For them to be cult-like as a leader, that they would be very focused on their personal brand versus the community or the company or organization, whatever it may be. Would you say there are other things to look for?
Another thing to look for is, when people refer to the coaching organization, do they refer to the name of the owner of the coaching organization or the founder, or do they refer to the name of the business? And I think it's a subtle but maybe not so subtle distinction.
Yeah, it seems like it could be subtle, but I agree. I think that's a big difference. I mean, especially, and you see this sometimes when people are crazy about the individual, but they may not even know the name of the business at all.
Right. Right. So yeah. So the founder and or CEO has created this great marketing engine around his or her personal name, and more often it's his rather than her. But there is probably a corporate name that actually protects the individual from liability, from personal liability. So yes, you're right. And the corporate name is not one that's known to the public very often. On the other hand, I can think of a few organizations that have been mentioned by my guests that it's really about the organization, not the founder, even though the founder is still involved. And I'll give a few examples. So BNI is one, which is now a worldwide organization that is really designed for members to help other members. Strategic Coach is another one, which may have, the founders are still involved, but it's really about the process. And I don't know, thinking about my guests on my podcast that have talked about Strategic Coach, and they usually talk about Strategic Coach, about the organization, not about Dan Sullivan.
Yeah, I mean, I think an interesting point is, if you're an entrepreneur, you don't want to be a bottleneck. You want to build teams, you want to, in a way, I mean, you've mentioned E-Myth, kind of this idea of working yourself out of a job, so to speak. You have people who can perform the tasks for you. And I do think it's interesting that so many times entrepreneurs will hire a coach who's not doing that themselves.
Right. E-Myth actually is a good example. Do people talk about E-Myth or do they talk about Michael Gerber?
Yeah, it's true. They talk about E-Myth.
Right. Yeah, so E-Myth is the process that Michael Gerber has articulated so well in his various publications, and he also has created an organization around it, but it's not about him, right? It's about the process of trying to take a company from being a technician to one where you're the CEO.
Yeah, and I guess the question that I'm having is, you know, in terms of
being an authority figure.
Because at the same time, if you're hiring a coach, you're hiring someone who's going to push you outside of your comfort zone, and you probably need someone who's going to push back a little if you say no, or, you know, to an extent, maybe they won't take no for an answer because that's what you want. So,
right, because if there isn't any change, there's not going to be any improvement.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And unless there's some discomfort, there's not going to be change.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, what's the balance between, you know, having someone who help you, who will push you, and then having someone who's, you know, cult-like, and they just don't take no for an answer because they always get what they want, or they have this group of followers who never question them.
Well, I think there's a fine line between admiration and misplaced or excessive admiration. However, I also think that we will know it when we see it for ourselves. And signs to watch out for are fixation or obsession, or maybe idolization of the individual who's running the coaching organization, and thinking that that person has all the answers, thinking that that person has been able to achieve wild success without a lot of hard work, thinking that if you just follow what that coach preaches, you will be able to create wild success for yourself and your company without a lot of hard work. So I'm putting the emphasis on this sort of misplaced or excessive quality that I think is part of what makes somebody a cult leader.
Maybe it's if the leader in question has absolute answers for everything. Everything's just a black or white issue.
Well, life is not linear. Business is not linear. The change process is nonlinear. And there, as we talked about earlier, there are a lot of complexities to scaling an organization. You're dealing with human dynamics. That's one of the most complex pieces of all. And it's dynamic. It's definitely not static. You get 10 people in a room on a Monday, and you get the same 10 people in the room on a Friday, and the meeting is going to go differently on both, you know, one day compared to the other. You might think that everything else is the same, but it's not.
Another thing I wonder about is if just the things that they're getting you to do, if it seems a little weird, because a coach is going to, if it's a good coach, they're going to stretch you. You're going to grow in a lot of ways. And maybe it's by doing out of the ordinary exercises. But, you know, to use an example that we've used a few times, you also have, you know, people who are walking across hot coals and get injured. And I was reading an article of people who did get injured, and the victims were the ones who were blamed because they didn't believe in themselves enough. That's why their feet got burned when they walked across hot coals. So I guess I'm wondering where the balance is in that, because I think there can be some good coming out of it if it's like, oh, this is something, you know, I had this exercise that I never would have done ordinarily, but I hired this coach and I did it and I learned something new about myself, versus doing something that's just very weird and it becomes very cult-like.
You know, the other thing you mentioned, Nick, is blaming the victim. I would say that if there's blame involved in trying to work through change, then that should be a major red flag, because a coach should be helping you to find solutions. A coach should not be in a situation to help you identify someone to blame, either yourself or others.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good one. Blame, shame in a lot of ways could be another one. Because I think if it's a healthy relationship, it's an effective coach, even if you do fail, I don't think there's going to be a lot of shame there, because you're still learning something new. You know, you're still growing in a lot of ways.
Babies don't learn to walk until they've fallen down a whole bunch of time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's not shame in that or victim blaming or anything like that.
And anything that seems like a breakthrough is usually achieved after many attempts and a bunch of missteps. And I would say that the difference between trying to keep at it and solve a problem, hit that breakthrough, and what happens when you're in a situation where people are always looking to point the finger, if you are if there's a, you know, a mistake or a failure or something that doesn't go as well as one would have hoped, but rather than pointing the finger at someone, you look at that experience as something that you were learning not to do the next time round, so that you can improve on the step, then it's a good learning experience, and then it's working towards a solution. If you're looking at a mistake as something to just blame someone, and you're expecting that it's going to happen again, and perhaps you do see that the same failures keep recurring, then you have a bigger systemic problem to deal with, and you're not working iteratively towards a solution.
In a lot of ways, that's where the best things can come from, is just by allowing yourself to make mistakes. I mean, an example that I think of is Basecamp, which is a very strong tool. And, you know, originally it was just an internal tool that the guys at the time, the company was called 37 Signals. It was something that they used with their clients. But it's so funny that they were originally a web design company, and they came up with this tool for their clients. And the clients loved it so much, they wanted to use this tool. Now that's what the company is entirely, is Basecamp. I always like stories like that, of a company that tries something new, or they have a problem, or they've made a mistake, and the solution to this problem completely changes the company. It changes gears completely. Would you say that's something to look for when trying to find a good coach? Maybe they want you to try new things, or, you know, they kind of commend failure, at least to a healthy extent.
Look, there's so many examples of individuals and organizations that have created some kind of breakthrough because of some unexpected direction, unexpected consequence, something that seemed like a mistake at first that turned out to be something that the marketplace needed. All right, so this is all about trying to find good product market fit, and trying to find the right mix of people and resources to help solve problems repeatedly, create value, and be profitable as a result.
One thing that I see happen is that entrepreneurs will build a very successful business, and they'll become, at least within a niche, a bit of a household name. A lot of people know who they are, and they begin to step outside of their area of expertise, or they step outside of the industry where they had a lot of success. Would you say, I mean, even though that's not really coaching specifically, but they can become very influential, and I see some cult-like tendencies there as well. Is that something that you have seen, David?
I can see how that can be sort of misplaced confidence in your ability as a leader to create something and to try to leverage that success into a new and unknown field, uncharted territory. And sometimes the translation will work, and sometimes it may not, because every industry has its culture. What might work in tech might not work in real estate. What works in real estate might not work in financial services or in healthcare. You know, every industry is different. Industries vary from one time to another. What worked in the auto industry 100 years ago, I can't imagine how it would work today. Look how things have changed in the communication industry, you know, just over the last 50 years. What might have led to a successful communication company 50 years ago, it's probably not going to work whatsoever today.
I think what we're talking about is really, really good. And I think that could be a good way to talk about basically just like guarding yourself against some kind of cult-like follower or cult-like organization, because I think by having a community, you'll have other free-thinking individuals.
Cult leaders will often want his or her audience to be focused on everything that the cult leader is saying, doing, preaching. And it's really about following the cult leader's mantra, as opposed to learning and sharing from members of the community that have grown up around the cult leader. And if you see if you see the cult leader feeling threatened by members of the community having significant influence toward one another, that could be a warning sign to you that you're probably in the wrong place.
Yeah, and I think we've touched on it on another episode where even just on a practical level, that's really where you can get a lot of value is being a part of a community because you're meeting a lot of people who are still in the trenches. And like you said, the communication industry has changed so much over the years, and that's true of every industry. So it sounds like it's not only a way to just avoid giving money to a cult-like leader. It sounds like it's really the best way to meet people who will just stay on top of the trends, stay on top of everything that changes, and they're going to have a lot of fresh ideas for solving problems because they probably solved that problem themselves, I would say. I mean, do you see that in a lot of these community-oriented groups that people are very transparent with their problems? Or at least in solving their problems, do they talk about that with each other?
People in good supportive communities where the community culture is designed to be non-judgmental and to be helpful, those kinds of communities do support open conversation. And people are often very willing to be open about their challenges fairly early on in their introduction to the community because they feel supported, not threatened. If you look at a community where behaving in one particular way is the norm and behavior outside the norm is frowned upon, then people are going to be much less willing to open up, particularly about their fears in areas where they seem vulnerable. If you look at political structures where the political structure is all about the person at the top and is very dictatorial, people are very reluctant and fearful about opening up. For obvious reasons, and those kinds of structures are often undone only with a revolution, and something that ends up causing harm to a lot of people because it's the only way to break out of it. If you look at religious cults, where there's a particular mode of behavior that's expected, people who deviate from that kind of behavior get shunned and ostracized. And it makes people very reluctant, I think, to open up and to make themselves, to show some vulnerability and to be open to getting some help and support and to make some changes in their behavior that will lead to greater success. On the other hand, if you look at structures, political, religious, social, and in terms of organizational support, where the help is about, or the organizational structure is designed to be non-judgmental, to be supportive, to help people work through their vulnerabilities and find solutions, then those are the kinds of communities that as a entrepreneur, business owner, CEO, you would want to be part of because they're going to encourage and support your success. They're not going to restrict you from growth. They're not going to restrict you from changes in behavior because ultimately it's your own change in behavior that is going to help you break through to the next level of success. So finding those kinds of right communities that are supportive, that are based on the value that members can bring to one another, that are not restrictive, not based on a cult personality, those are the kind of communities you want to be in. You want to be in supportive, open communities, and ultimately they can be really helpful to you.
Do you have any closing thoughts on why it's important for a coach or a leader or anyone to be able to take criticism from their team. And criticism might be too harsh of a word, but basically just kind of voicing their concerns.
As your company grows, you want to surround yourself with people who will ask questions that will help you avoid costly mistakes. And you also yourself need to be open to people around you who can give you honest feedback and not feel threatened. Honest feedback about what you're doing that is helpful as the organizational leader and what you may be doing that's not so helpful as the organizational leader, so that you can, if needed, change your behavior and be as helpful as possible. So the corollary is, if you're looking to someone to help you grow as a person, as a leader, and to grow your company, you want to be with either an individual or a community that supports the same process of open inquiry and a process of self-reflection. And if you're looking at a coaching organization that's very cult-driven, it's not going to be open to self-reflection. It's not going to be open to change. It's going to be focused on doing what the cult leader dictates is the best path to follow. So if you find yourself looking for help where it seems like there's only one path that's dictated by someone with an ego-driven personality, be forewarned and think about how you can surround yourself with people who are, both as a community of peer supporters or employees who can help you be self-reflective and help you make any needed changes in behavior, so that your company can avoid some of those major pitfalls. Because we know that costly mistakes can end up derailing your company. And in some ways, the costly mistakes can be more harmful than not taking a step that is going to lead to growth. So just be wary of cult-like signs, either that are there in an organization that you're using to support you, or any signs that you may be creating a cult-like environment in your own company with yourself as the cult figure.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. What has your experience been getting help when you've hit a plateau? What would you like to learn through this podcast that would give you the support you need? Let's continue the discussion. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter. And please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious. I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.